I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Before we start this week's episode of Nexium on Trial, I wanted to take a moment to note that the paper's investigative coverage of Keith Raniere and his organization was supported primarily by ART subscribers, whose readership paid the salaries of reporters, copy editors, and digital designers, as well as the lawyers who provided the good counsel that made our work bulletproof against this highly litigious group. If you subscribe to the Times Union, thanks. If you don't, please consider supporting our watchdog reporting. Without you, the truth might never come to light.
If you're enjoying Nexium on Trial, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall, host of The Eagle. Each week, we'll take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union, and welcome to another episode of Nexium on Trial, our podcast on the strange case of Nexium, the purported self-improvement group located right here in the Capital Region, and the federal investigations and convictions that have emerged from its doings. Once again, I'm happy to be joined by our own Rob Gavin, who has been covering the case in federal courthouses and suburban enclaves right here in the greater Albany area. Rob, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Casey. It's good to be here, as always.
So the big news, and I think it's fair to say that January has been a relatively quiet month in the Nexium saga. But the big news, which you reported not quite a month ago, is that while all of us are freezing here in beautiful upstate New York, Keith Raniere has been transferred from Brooklyn, where he had been cooling his heels for almost 3 years now, and is now in Arizona. Can you give us more details on that?
Sure. Keith Raniere, like you mentioned, I've been in the MDC, which is the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. That's where supporters of Nexium had been out dancing every night in the summer to support him and supposedly to support other inmates as well. So this was basically a Keith Raniere show. And that was really something that we became accustomed to. And it was easy for his supporters to come visit him. Well, they have finally changed his whereabouts. He had a stopover point for a little bit on the way for like a day or so. And now he is in Tucson, Arizona. And this is a facility, FCI Tucson. And this happened over his objections. His counsel, he has, among other things, a couple of new attorneys, but he had requested that because of the current public health crisis, obviously COVID, he requested through his lawyer that he be remained to stay at the MDC until what he said in his through his lawyer, until he had an opportunity to voice an objection to the upcoming restitution claims from victims and until the court entered a restitution order. And to get an idea of what the timing is on that, that just happened this week and he has 30 days to respond to that. So that would have brought us till March as it was. So obviously Keith Raniere was in no rush to leave Brooklyn, which is, you know, just a few blocks away from, really just a short distance from where he went on trial in the borough of Kings. But he has been transferred. The judge did not see to agree with Keith's attorneys and you know, they had said in their letter, they basically said that, you know, in normal times, traveling to confer with the defendant would not be a problem. But in the current climate, traveling to Tucson would be, what they said, exceedingly burdensome, to speak nothing of the health risks posed to all involved, quote unquote. And they wrote that given the complexity of the case and the stakes involved, the undersigned counsel, which is, you know, legal language for the attorney, must have meaningful communication with her client, which cannot be accomplished via phone calls. And they wrote that, in short, she cannot provide Raniere with the defense to which he's entitled without reasonable access to him. This has been something, whereas the world has been dealing with COVID. And as part of that, obviously one of the populations that it was affected most of anyone really are people and inmates in correctional facilities. And, you know, this is no exception. But again, you know, this is not a problem that only impacts Keith Raniere. He's not the only impact.
I would just like to note that with the exception of a few encounters at the dog park, I have meaningful communications with you several times a week, but we don't do it in person. So the argument that lawyers and clients are, you know, can't get their work done sort of flies in the face of what everybody else is dealing with amid the COVID-19 pandemic. So Tucson FCI, as you noted in your story, is a medium security federal facility. It's not a supermax. It's not for the worst of the worst, despite the fact that Raniere has a sentence that could keep him behind bars for the rest of his natural life. You noted that a couple of the other residents at FCI Tucson include the founder of Silk Road, which was a major narcotics trafficking sort of online marketplace, and H. Rap Brown, who was, of course, a figure in the Black Power movement, you know, back in the 60s as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be some other well-known individuals Keith Raniere is going to be around. I mean, he came from MDC, which is no shortage of high-level inmates there for both men and women. Obviously, some of the higher profile people now getting the COVID vaccine. And you know, and that included Jeffrey Epstein's longtime, Ghislaine Maxwell was at the MDC, which until just a few months ago, that's where Claire Prompfman was as well. So when you go to these federal lockups, you're going to be around some high profile people. And I think that's always been one of the sort of the unknowns is, you know, how's Keith Raniere going to mesh with his fellow inmates, given his, you know, his past? He's an unusual defendant, to say the least. The typical type of crimes you go to federal prison for, Keith Raniere is sort of in his own category, given the entity that obviously was NXIVM.
What we know of Keith Raniere is that he tends to do well in social settings, that he knows how to assert himself. How well that is going to manifest itself on the chow line, I think, probably remains to be seen. So we should move on and note that Raniere also has a new attorney who is working on his case. And why don't you tell us something about her and her previous work?
Yeah, this is a really interesting attorney. And I think when I first saw the name, you know, it looked a little familiar. And then when you start looking up the people that she's represented, her name is Jennifer Bongean. People in the Capital Region may remember her if they know their history in the state capital. And I think Casey obviously is someone who is familiar with what's happened there over the last few years. She was in the Capitol as part of a group lobbying for, you know, MMA. She was an MMA enthusiast.
Mixed martial arts for those arts. Uncertain on the lexicon. Yes.
That's right. And she has had a history at Albany in that, but she's much better known. She's one of these high profile attorneys. And she was an attorney on behalf of Bill Cosby, the very well-known comedian who is now a convicted sexual predator. And she was his attorney and she went to bat for him at the basically what would be the equivalent of the Court of Appeals, the top court in the state of Pennsylvania. And that was for his conviction. He was convicted of drugging and sexually assaulting a woman in his home in Philadelphia in 2014. Bill Cosby serving a 3 to 10 year sentence in federal prison as well. She went to bat there, trying to essentially try to get that conviction overturned. And that's something, whereas it's interesting in the past, such as with the mixed martial arts advocacy of trying to oppose what she called mistreatment of women. When she was at the Capitol, you know, she had said, we live in a society where women are often seen as sex objects. And she made sort of a vague reference at that time. Do you remember the scandal involving former New York State Assemblyman Vito Lopez, And she had said, there are sexist men everywhere, including in this building, maybe even in this room. And now she goes from there to now defending Keith Raniere, who obviously is someone who is known as someone who shamed women, someone who ordered women under his direction to be burned with his initials in the branding ceremonies in the master slave group. He was the top master, and he had a pyramid structure of slaves and what we now know as DOS, Dominus Obsequious Sororium. It's interesting. This happens with a lot of attorneys. They can go from defending one side and then they go completely straight to the other. And again, you know, her representation of him is going to be sort of an interesting one, because it does raise the question of, you know, how many attorneys is Keith Raniere going to have? He's had Mark Agnifilo as his attorney from the beginning. He's also had someone we know up here very well, Paul Derenassian, as his attorney. And there are also attorneys who work with those attorneys. Danielle Smith works with Paul Derenassian. She's been on the team. And, you know, he's also had Penny Garagos, of course, who, you know, is the daughter of Mark Garagos. So, I mean, he's had a lot. Keith Raniere is not at a loss for attorneys. And so it'll be interesting to see how long that goes, that he continues to have this sort of largesse legal help, particularly because when you make an appeal, and let's say that Jennifer Bongean makes the appeal, it's very common in the course of an appeal, whether it's at the state level or otherwise, for a defense attorney to use as one of the reasons they argue, the reason they believe their client should get a new trial, is they will very often, if not pretty much, it's a foregone conclusion, will push that their client had ineffective counsel at trial. That's why a lot of times you'll see new attorneys taking on a case. My sense is that would be that Jennifer Bongean is going to be running Keith's appeal. It's very clear to anybody who's been paying attention to this case that Judge Nicholas Garalfis is not someone who particularly is going to change his mind about Keith Raniere anytime soon. He sentenced him to 120 years in prison. He's currently has some time. He's going to be deciding the amount of restitution that Keith has to give back to his many victims. That file actually was just filed this week, and that was actually sealed because there's a lot of personal information, is my understanding, about the victims involved. So while many things in federal court are not sealed, that is actually sealed. So Keith Raniere's appeal is something that's obviously going to be coming in the next year or two. And my sense is that would be where Bongean comes in.
Rob, this is the first episode of Nexium on Trial of the post-Trump era. And we should note as well that there was a story, there was some coverage on the Frank Report, I believe, which is the Buffalo area website run by Frank Parlato, who of course has been a sort of a supporting player as an opponent of Nexium and Keith Raniere for quite a while now. And they posted up on a letter that purported to come from Keith Raniere, sent to former President Donald Trump in the waning days of his administration, asking for a pardon. And of course, listeners are probably well aware that there was a flurry of scores of pardons and commutations from President Trump in the very final days of his term in office. And Keith Raniere was not among them. But what was, based on this letter, you've seen it, what was the argument that it made?
It's really interesting. I have seen the letter. And, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, I did reach out to Keith's attorneys. They really didn't want to confirm it, or they didn't confirm it. So, you know, we were never able to confirm from Keith Raniere himself or people close to him that he wrote it. But I mean, I think Frank Parlato obviously is very plugged in there. You know, he did forward me the letter, and it kind of says basically, Dear President Trump, it's January 11th, 2020. It says, I, Keith Allen Raniere, hereby request a presidential pardon and hereby authorize Make Justice Blind to formally request the pardon on my behalf. Now, Make Justice Blind, if that name doesn't ring a bell, that was the group of supporters, including Nikki Klein and others, that were basically trying to push for Keith Raniere's exoneration, claiming he was a victim of bad prosecution. It says that this, "Dear President Trump, I believe the charges should never have been brought, that they should now be dismissed, and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of New York should be investigated. If I am pardoned, I plan to show the malicious wrongful corruption in my case and expose all the issues." It says the issues in his case, however, are not unique. "Corruption is rampant at the Department of Justice and must stop." And then the last thing he says there is, "The pardon must not confer guilt or stand as an act of clemency, but rather should be a condemnation of the corruption." And he goes on to say, you know, "If released, I will fully dedicate myself to proving my innocence and fighting the endemic corruption of the Department of Justice, which I've witnessed firsthand." And there's another letter which came from Make Justice Blind and Keith Raniere. There's even a quote they say there, which is, "For me, by random chance, I became a nationally visible figure and immersed in an amplified, hateful injustice. I am innocent, but can I be free? President Trump, it's up to you." Well, unfortunately for Make Justice Blind and Keith Raniere, that pardon did not come from Donald Trump. I mean, there's some interesting angles there when you look at it, because Donald Trump obviously pardoned Roger Stone. Roger Stone is someone who is familiar with NXIVM. He appeared on the documentary that was made about a year or so ago by Frank Parlato, was involved in it, about NXIVM. He took classes of NXIVM, is not a particular fan of NXIVM. In fact, Roger Stone was one of the names of people that NXIVM kept files on. So based on that, you'd say, well, you know, why would they then necessarily be in the good graces of Donald Trump? I mean, it's something I can tell you, during one conversation when I was reaching out to associates of Keith Raniere at the end of last year for one of the stories I was working on, I asked one of them, and I said, are you going to ask President Trump for a pardon? Is he going to ask for a pardon? And, you know, the person I was on the phone with, who's definitely in that inner circle of people still loyal to Keith Raniere, kind of answered me like I had five heads, like, well, almost like they didn't know what I was even asking about. I think this sort of came probably late. I think they probably realized that they had nothing to lose. I was frankly surprised that we didn't see a greater push from the Raniere side to try to get some sort of push to the former president. Because let's face it, Donald Trump was as unpredictable a person as there could be, especially with pardons. You never know. Probably would never happen, but you know, if there was ever someone who might do it, you just never know. He certainly was not a fan of Department of Justice. So it's something that, you know, they made the effort, but it never came. I mean, you know, like, we heard a lot of rumors. Obviously, there was some talk about Shelley Silver getting a pardon, the former assembly speaker. I never heard anything that this was ever even close to being considered. So, I mean, that was sort of a Hail Mary that was put out there, maybe a Hail Keith, and it was not, obviously, that didn't come close to fruition. And
just to be clear, you're talking about it, the idea of a Raniere pardon didn't come close. According to our mutual friend Mike Gormley, who works for Newsday on Long Island, the potential pardon for Sheldon Silver, who, for our readers who are not familiar with New York State politics, is a former all-powerful speaker, Democratic speaker of the state assembly, who 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe right about this week, was charged with a range of corruption felonies, was convicted, got to appeal, got a second trial, I should say, and was convicted again. And really only in the past couple of months has been consigned to another federal facility in the slightly cooler climes of Otisville in the Lower Hudson Valley. Mike Gormley had an excellent story noting that Shelley's potential pardon by Trump got much closer to fruition than, in fact, somebody either in the White House or close to the White House called Silver's wife and said, hey, you know, gas up the car. You could go pick him up at Otisville tomorrow. And that got to leaders of the state Republican Party, who apparently pressed the White House and said, don't let Sheldon Silver out. He's not a good guy.
In this episode of American Greed,
I'm just a demon.
Keith Raniere is Vanguard.
We should also note, kind of concluding this episode with our regular feature, meta media Nexium, perhaps we should call it, that CNBC's program American Greed focused on the case of Nexium and Raniere. And you noted that there were a couple of interesting tidbits that they turned up.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting show. You know, there was, among other people, Angela Ucci, who was a member of Nexium. We really haven't seen a whole lot of Angela in a lot of the shows like The Vow or The Seduced, which was obviously by Starz. But I thought there were some people who spoke that we haven't seen before. And Angela Ucci was someone who was a head coach at Nexium. She spoke at length. There were some interesting little tidbits that came out in that special. We did see Moira Penza, the lead prosecutor on the case, who spoke. There's a comment that Raniere shows, I haven't seen this before, where he's talking about himself and he says, I'm very, and he, meanwhile, this is while Keith Raniere was speaking to a group of Nexium students. And he says, I'm very devilish. And I think I'm probably the worst coach in the world because I'm just a demon. And then he says in another clip, I do this, it's with a twisted sense of pleasure. It's some really interesting quotes there. Joe O'Hara, former associate consultant of Nexium, who pretty quickly became considered a perceived enemy of Nexium. He weighs in on the branding and says, you could do a lot of crazy S.T in this country. You cannot brand people, which was really kind of a I thought that was interesting. I also thought it was interesting that Angela Ucci spoke about the sashes and how they wore different color sashes that we knew about. But what I didn't know about, I don't remember this from the trial, is she said that when they came up with the idea to wear the sashes to designate rank in Nexium, she said, we discussed that people are going to say we are a cult if we have these things. And obviously the word cult was not a popular word to use in Nexium, was shunned to use the word cult, was certainly something that Nexium and Keith Raniere did not want being said. And as we all know now, Nexium is constantly called a cult. So that didn't really work out that well.
Rob, I really appreciate it once again, and we'll be checking in periodically with you. Stay warm, stay safe. And to everyone out there, thanks very much for listening. And please remember that the Times Union's coverage of Nexium and its other watchdog reporting is supported by our subscribers. So thanks very much. If you support local journalism, and if not, please consider it. This has been another episode of Nexium on Trial. I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Thanks.